The legislature's enactment of a wolf hunting season in Wisconsin has been controversial, to say the least. Farmers' organizations support it because they say the wolf population in the state has grown too large and wolves are killing livestock. On the other hand, you've got conservation groups and Humane Society officials that say the state is rushing the wolf hunt and hunting dogs could be killed in the process. But until recently, there hasn't been much press about wolf hunt opposition from Wisconsin's tribal members. So this hour, we invite some perspective on why the Anishinaabe in Wisconsin don't want a state wolf hunt. I'm Rich Kramer, and this is a special edition of The West Side Outside. Joining us for this evening's discussion is Lakota Ray Tribal Council member and chair of the Voight Intertribal Task Force, Mick Isham. Mick, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And next, I'd like to welcome Jim Zorn. Jim is the executive administrator for the Great Lakes Indian and Fish and Wildlife Commission. Jim, thank you for being here as well.
Well, good evening. You're welcome.
And as always on the West Side, I'd like to welcome the outdoor guys, including host of the syndicated TV show Northland Adventures. That's Dave Carlson. Dave, thank you for stopping by.
Glad to be here.
And outdoor editor for the Eau Claire Leader-Telegram, Joe Knight. Joe, thanks for taking the time.
Thanks for inviting me.
And then later this hour, we'll get an update on the other upcoming fall hunting seasons with DNR wildlife biologist, semi-retired that is, John Dunn. But first, we're talking wolf hunt, and I'd like to get some listeners to chime in on this as well. What do you think of a statewide wolf hunt? Are wolves becoming a problem for your area, or do you think the state legislature is rushing a hunt and therefore threatening the species? Give us a call. The number is 800-228-5615. The phone lines are wide open. That number again is 1-800-228-5615. And to get some perspective on this from the tribal point of view, I'd like to start with Mick Isham. Why are wolves held in such high esteem among the Anishinaabe?
Well, wolves, as you point out, just for the Anishinaabe and also for other tribes throughout the country, we hold wolves in a sacred role in our culture and our religion. And how I explained it to one of my, I guess I'd call him wolf-hating friend, because he's pretty adamant about killing wolves. I explained it to him. He's a Catholic person, so I said, in your religion, you have a lot of holy or spiritual beings. For example, you know, the Holy Trinity, Father, the Son, the Holy Ghost. Also, he had all the saints that they have in their religion. Well, Mayingan, the wolf, to us, is just like that. We hold it as one of our sacred beings. And our teachings tell us that the wolf was put down here on the earth to be our companion and our teacher. And as the wolf goes, we go. The wolf is our brother. So if the wolf is in peril, we'd be in peril. If the wolf is doing well, we'd be doing well. So that's pretty much how we, in a general overview, how we view the wolf.
And it's an obvious question then. Why do the tribes oppose a wolf hunting season while, you know, they support tribal or hunting seasons for, say, bear or deer or other animals? I imagine you just answered that question.
Well, the Lakota Ray tribe does not issue bear tags because we were founded by the Bear Clan people, so we have a lot of Bear Clan people, and their job is to protect the bear.
Okay.
But in all those other animals, we harvest them for food. And I don't know of anybody that has any wolf recipes. In fact, that's one of the things I was telling my son. What are you, you know, you're going to cook that up? Or he just wants to kill it. Every bad thing he heard about wolves, he believes. And although to me, the biology just isn't there.
Mick, you know, the state is doing this because of complaints from members of the public, the farming community, and so forth, the hunters who think wolves are killing too many deer. Uh-huh. Have any of your tribal members or anybody in the Glyphwick community had any problems with wolves? Do you have any ranchers or farmers who have had predation? And if so, how have they dealt with it? The same thing for the pets and hunt, any domestic animals they might have, dogs I'm thinking about, perhaps hunting dogs, just domestic dogs. Have there been any incidents of that?
Well, you know, to take the wolves out and single them out like that, we look at things in a holistic way. We don't separate out the wolves or the bear or the deer or the trees. You know, DNR has a department for fisheries. They have a department for wildlife or water. We look at things in a holistic approach. And so is the whole system in peril? And we see things like chronic wasting disease, or we see things like water quality, and know that in some way the system's broke. And we think that wolves, regardless of if they're taking some deer or taking some livestock, it's part of a healthy ecosystem to have them there. I don't believe that we'd have the spread of chronic wasting disease if we had the wolves on the landscape at carrying capacity. So, but I mean, specifically, no, we don't have any farmers on our reservation. There's no livestock issues. And also we don't use dogs for hunting, as at least I don't know of anybody who does. So I haven't heard of any incidences like that.
Mick, Joe Knight here with Leader Telegram. You mentioned carrying capacity. I've talked about this a little bit with Jim Zorn, but is there a number at which you think the wolves will have occupied all the places in Wisconsin where they can live? I know that the state has a goal of 350 animals, which may be a tad on the low side, but do you recognize a number where you can say, okay, the wolves, we have as much wolves around as the landscape can hold?
Well, I don't think there is such a number, because it would change on any given month or day. I think carry capacity takes care of itself. Like I said, in the holistic view of it, it would be hard to put a nice number on there, like 350. That's a pretty even number. And, I think when the numbers, I've sat in some meetings that were talking numbers and, especially with depredation permits and now all the tags and the formulas that go out, I don't have a lot of confidence in the numbers that are out there yet. It seems to me they just got delisted off the endangered species list. It reminds me of the early days of the Voight decision, when there was all this fear of the tribes over harvesting. But now, after all these years, we have some really good data. I think in time we would have good data and good numbers, but now I just believe it's just too soon.
And Mick, more than 11,000 people, at least as the latest numbers I've seen, have applied for these wolf hunting permits. What do you think of that?
Wow, I'm astounded by it. And I wonder where all these people are coming from. Are they coming from Milwaukee, Madison? Actually, I know a lot of people up here as well that are interested in getting permits that I debate on a regular basis.
Yeah, actually, the number is closer to 13,000 as of about 8:30 this morning.
So I think it just goes to show that sport hunting is a big thing.
Sure.
And I always talk with the DNR, and our numbers are always going to be different because we don't look at it in a sport harvest sort of way. We look at it as a sustenance harvest, our treaty guaranteed rights. And so in many ways our systems merge, because obviously we care about the fish, the deer, that's in common. But when it comes to sport, that's where things are different. You might want a great big muskie rather than a small eatable muskie, or a big buck for your wall, and we would rather take younger deer. So that's kind of how we look at it anyway.
Does either Mick or Jim, what steps are you going to take to stop the hunt? And I know some of that's in process already, but do you think you will be able to stop the hunt?
Go ahead, Jim. You're the lawyer.
Oh, yeah, thanks, Vic. No, you know, as I think, Joe, as you and I had talked at one point about this, you know, the tribes haven't met to consider the Department of Natural Resources' response to the task force, the Void Hearing Tribal Task Force's request that, in essence, there be no hunt. And that meeting will take place in early September. But the real problem that I think goes with that type of question, Dave, is, as you heard Mick talk about, the tribal reps that we deal with are having a real hard time talking about this, the wolf and Mayingan issue, in the terms of legalese and biological technicalities that we're sort of used to with deer, fish, wild rice, and those other things. Here, the tribes are taking the view that, you know, their treaty right in the ceded territory for wolves involves the presence of the wolves rather than their killing. And so, you know, the real process that needs to take place between the state and the tribes is, what is that management goal, Joe, that you were trying to get to? What is, you know, you put it in terms of numbers. The tribes are very uncomfortable with numbers, and I think what the tribes want to do is engage the DNR in that. And, you know, in terms of talking about legal action, it's premature. The tribes have to get together and consider their options. You know, they want to think long term. They want to think positive about this. They don't want to go back, you know, today's, you know, we've seen some of the blogs with response to some of the, in response to some of these media articles, and boy, they kind of sound like the 80s again in response to the boat landings. And the tribes are just right now trying to say a very positive thing about their view of the wolves, and immediately the talk turns to, are you going to court or aren't you? The tribes are just, they're not there yet. And this is such an emotional and heartfelt and, you know, cultural reaction here that it's very hard to even talk in terms of these white man's terms of courts and so on. So it's just really premature to go to that point.
What are you doing to educate the public that doesn't know about this, looking at the wolf the way the tribes do in such short time? I mean, the clock is ticking, and how much support do you need to win? How much education do you need to do?
You can address some of the local folks you've been talking to there. And from Glyphwick's perspective, you know, this whole process from the time the legislation was proposed and we did some testimony, I've been amazed at the outpouring of support that the tribal perspective has had. And, you know, I'm not so sure that the overall Wisconsin public supports the approach of wolf killing here to a goal of 350. And so I think that the DNR board at their last meeting said, let's reexamine that management plan. So let's see if we get down on that road. And I hear a lot of voices out there that are expressing grave concern about the wolves. Mick, what do you hear locally?
Well, besides that, bringing the tribal elders around like we did to the Natural Resource Board, Joe Rose Sr., to talk about the teachings. See, I'm not a cultural leader, and there's certain times when those stories can be told, and I'm not one that can tell those stories like our cultural leader can. And so bringing the elders around is one thing, and teaching our own children and our own people those teaching and keeping those going. But locally, mostly it's individuals. I haven't spoke to groups. It's just everyone always asking me the questions, you know, because they read these news bits and stuff. And why the heck are the tribes opposed when they're killing all the deer? I'm like, killing all the deer? If they did that, they wouldn't survive. You know, every time we can repair a part of the ecosystem, a piece that was lost, I think that's a positive thing, and the ecosystem can take care of itself.
Dave Carlson?
Well, Joe, go ahead.
Okay. I was going to say, first of all, that Jim Zorn, the Chippewa, especially the LCO, have done quite well in the white man's court in the past. So you have a pretty good track record there when it comes down to that. In the response, the letter the DNR sent back to you folks, they said, you're entitled to half the wolves in the ceded territory, which they calculated to be 85, although it's not sure how they're going to allocate that half. But they also said, under the Voight decision, the state are the folks who are supposed to be doing the managing here. The tribe is entitled to half the harvest, but it's the state who has the authority to manage. Do you take issue with that? And does that trump your argument that, hey, there should be no wolves taken?
You know, you can't take issue with it in general principle because the federal court did say that the state retains management authority over natural resources in the treaty-ceded territories.
Well, the court put
an important proviso on that. It is subject to the tribe's rights, and so the state's management authority is now limited, and it is not it does not have unfettered discretion to do whatever it pleases in the ceded territory. It is metric to the detriment of the tribes. Their treaty rights or the resources that are subject to those rights. And so the tribes definitely do take issue with that statement, and the tribes' position on this one is that whatever management authority the state has, they would be exceeding it by pushing this population down to 350 wolves because the tribes need more than 350 to realize the benefit of their treaty reserve rights to the presence of wolves on the landscape.
And with that, we're going to take our first break, and we're going to bid adieu to Mick Isham. Mick, thanks so much for joining us for as long as you could today.
Thank you for the opportunity.
And best of luck at the soccer game this evening.
Thank you.
And with that, like I said, we're going to take our first break. But callers, if you want to get in on this discussion about the wolf hunting season that's scheduled to take place this fall in Wisconsin, give us a call, 800-228-5615. That number again is 1-800-228-5615. We'll have more when we return. I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to a special edition of the West Side Outside on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in. We're talking about tribal opposition to the wolf hunt and the state's pursuit of a wolf hunt in general and how it pertains to tribal treaty rights. I'm joined now by Jim Zorn, executive administrator, for the Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission. And we just said goodbye to Mick Isham, Lacouture Tribal Council member. And we're also joined by the outdoor guys, Joe Knight and Dave Carlson. And a little bit later, we'll hear from DNR wildlife biologist John Dunn about the upcoming fall hunting seasons other than wolf. Listeners, I'm curious to know what you think of the state's plan for the state fall wolf hunt. Is it too soon, or have you been waiting for the feds to delist the Western Great Lakes wolf for some time now? Give us a call. The number is 800-228-5615. That number again is 1-800-228-5615. Now, Jim Zorn, we were just talking about the response that was sent from DNR Secretary Kathy Stepp in response to your letter that you sent out on the 9th, I believe, of this month. And it seemed like there was some kind of a misunderstanding about what the treaty rights really are with regards to the VOIT and whether or not this is about a harvesting right or a preservation right. Am I getting that right, or could you help us understand what's at issue here?
That essentially is it. The whole, you know, when we think about deer, fish, wild rice, these other types of natural resources that are out there, we normally talk about, you know, you come together, you come to some, you know, reasonable agreement. You know, there might still be some differences around the edges as to what the resource out there should look like. You know, where do you want it to go? What's your management goal? You start from there, and you get biologists together, and you talk about, okay, what are the biological issues here? If we take, you know, how many can we take and still have a naturally reproducing, self-sustaining population? And, you know, then, you know, you obviously with management, natural resource management, there's other things other than biology. There's, you know, social needs, other needs that people accommodate. And so you come to some agreement on the number that you want to harvest out there. And then you get together and you talk about it and say, okay, how do we want to allocate this between treaty and non-treaty and so on and so forth. With the wolves, and especially given the rapidity after delisting with which this has happened, you know, the tribes are at the point where they have not, as you heard Mick say, have not really in their own minds, you know, been able to come up with a concrete number for a management goal. All they know is that the number of wolves on the landscape now is what they view has to be there to even begin to think about meeting their need to have this very important animal on the landscape to meet a need other than, as Mick said, eating. It is the presence of the wolf is what is necessary for the tribes to really continue their culture and their lifeways as they believe they had reserved in the treaty. So it is a different approach to the ceded territory treaty rights than we're used to, where the tribes are saying we need to have a certain level of wolf population there in order for us to really enjoy the benefit of what we reserve to ourselves in the treaties.
I understand it as an affront to their religion.
You heard Mick say that very clearly. And then they're, you know, whether you call that religion, culture, spirituality, I don't know what label one puts on it, but I guess from my perspective and my experience with this particular treaty right case, you know, the tribes have always understood that they reserved their rights in the ceded territory to meet their subsistence, their economic, their cultural, their spiritual, and medicinal needs. And so, you know, wolf Mayingan fits in a different category, certainly than the first two, the subsistence or the commercial, and certainly fits more in the latter three. And so that's where, you know, their presence is a much more important thing than, you know, say, divvying up a deer and let's go get some meat and let's feed ourselves and let's do it with the proper reciprocity and reverence and humility towards the natural world.
Minnesota has three times or more the number of wolves we do. They're looking for only double the amount of wolf harvest as we are, 200 in this state compared to 400 there. They're issuing 4,000 tags. We're probably issuing 2,000. Yet you don't hear the same Native American argument over there. Don't hunt the wolf that we're this, you know. At least it's not affecting a discussion about a season as it is in Wisconsin. Why not?
But my understanding is that the tribes in Minnesota certainly have claimed a at least on reservation, certainly a no wolf hunt zone like the tribes in Wisconsin have. And then the part of Minnesota that we deal with is the East Central Minnesota, the 1837 ceded territory. And our tribes have expressed the same sentiment that I think out of the wolves that the state proposes to harvest in Minnesota, they're proposing, I want to say, 38 in the treaty territory that we deal with. And our tribes have certainly registered the same, you know, complaint that they think the population is not ready to hunt yet.
And just a reminder, we're talking about the state wolf hunt and the opposition among tribal members in Wisconsin. If any of our listeners want to call in and join the conversation, the number is 800-228-5615. That number again is 1-800-228-5615. If you missed part of the show or want to listen again, you can also check out our online archives at wpr.org. A real quick question for you, Jim. Is the Western Great Lakes wolf was taken off the federal endangered species about 8 months ago, but yet we've got a wolf hunting season planned for this fall. Do you see this as a political move? Because there are a number of lobbyists that were championing this cause, including the Safari Club International, the United Sportsmen of Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Firearm Owners and Ranges Clubs and Educators, Wisconsin Bear Hunters Association, Farm Bureau Federation, etc. Is this political?
Those are certainly constituencies of people who are put in office, and they certainly carry a voice. And as we were talking about earlier, natural resource management, you know, involves things other than biology. It involves social issues and so on. And, you know, the state is responding to those to certain constituencies. And as is the case, I guess, in any legislature, whoever has the votes gets to carry the day. Maybe that's an indirect yes answer, that, you know, the politics have come into play here.
Jim, you said just a few seconds ago that the tribes feel that the wolves are not ready to hunt yet. Does that mean at some time they might concede that they should be hunted?
That's an open question. You know, the tribes are going to have to cross that bridge when they get there. You know, that's going to be an issue for them to discuss within their own communities.
Jim, understood that the tribes would just soon not see any wolves harvested, but have you had any further discussions with what this 85 wolf level means? Are you hoping that the DNR will knock off that many permits then for like the equivalent, like 1,000 permits or however would be the equivalent of getting a harvest of 85 wolves?
No, we haven't had any discussions. I haven't, I didn't talk to our biologists today to see if they've heard anything, but I haven't heard anything myself.
If you had to measure the level of support for this among the community up there, Is it dissent in among the tribal members, and just how much is it favored or not favored by the non-tribal member community in the ceded territory? Can you gauge that, or do you even want to take a stab at it? Just, you know, how do people feel?
I think it's a very difficult thing to take a stab at. I live in an area outside Ashland where there's certainly agriculture and there's farms and so on, and, you know, very aware of how, you know, farmers feel if they lose livestock, or a house owner might feel if they lose a pet. And so, you know, I do think there is, you know, a sentiment for wolf hunting, but, you know, up here there's also a sentiment for, if you think about where the areas of the Suquamish National Forest and other areas where wolves were kind of the key areas where they were, you know, being repopulated and coming back, I think there's a lot of support for the wolves as part of the landscape without this aggressive removal effort.
And go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay. Oh, that's fine. Go ahead.
Jim, as the hunt is set up, there's different zones, and the state is trying to emphasize a greater kill in these private areas where there's some conflicts with wildlife, or with livestock, excuse me. I know down in Eau Claire we have basically in the middle of Dunn County, surrounded by farmland, there's a wolf pack, and it's gotten into a little mischief with some of the livestock. Do you see that as a legitimate concern of the state? You know, that is not an area where they tried to encourage wolves to be in their original plan. In fact, they said if wolves get into this type of area, we're going to try to get rid of them there.
Yeah, and, you know, the tribe's view, at least from the Border Area Tribal Task Force, and this was, before the wolves were off the list, their view on depredation, as they expressed it, I think, I can't remember if it was the federal government or to the state governments, but was that, you know, all efforts to really, first of all, verify that it actually is wolf-causing problem, and that, two, you figure out all the things that might be contributing to this, you know, to the wolf, you know, livestock interaction. And once, you know, all that stuff is handled, and only as the last resort, might lethal depredation be considered. So that's the position that they've taken in the past on that, you know, with some recognition. Dave Carlson, you perhaps remember Matt Eau Claire from Bad River, who was, one of the biggest voices on the Void Area Tribal Task Force for Mayingan. You know, he had really, you know, expressed a sentiment that, you know, one has to be careful to say never, because, there can be evil beings in any species, you know. And so, but they just express the sentiment of only as an absolute, absolute last resort, when you've addressed all other measures to mitigate the interaction that people are having problems with.
Ceded territory becoming a refuge for wolves?
I don't know, David. At this point, you know, see this. What's really interesting about this conversation is sort of, and I really appreciate the questions, to try to think, you know, in these very practical things down the road. Right now, the tribes are thinking in terms of what we need to do is stop the movement towards 350. We need to try to get the population to at least what we have now and try to get it to move upward. You know, the biologists and the population models and other things like that probably will talk about, well, if you have that, is there still a biological harvestable surplus? And if so, then how do you want to do that? And then, Joel, that's where your question comes in. Well, what is the state management authority, and what could it do with its share of the resource in the ceded territory? Those are all questions at this point that are out there that are going to have to be addressed as time moves on.
Thank you for your candid remarks on this, Jim, as always. Very insightful.
As you can imagine, it's a tough issue, and it becomes very personal for a lot of tribal representatives, and it is a very difficult thing for them to speak about sometimes. So,
okay. Jim, while we have you on, what's up with the wild rice? I understand it's going to be another poor harvest year.
It's very spotty out there. You guys probably know about this as much as anybody, too. It's, throughout the three-state region we deal in. I mean, for example, the Fond du Lac tribe up in outside of Duluth there, that big flood, or the big rain that flooded out Duluth,
wiped it right out.
The tribe basically lost its rice crop in its major production areas. And so, you know, what rice in the Bad River tribe, very, very sparse bed on its reservation this year. And so, you know, what rice there is in the treaty ceded territories, I think we're going to see a lot of people looking at it. We've seen an instance, for example, over by Lac du Flambeau and Island Lake this past weekend where people just itching to go or going into a bed that was just really not ready, and you're knocking down things you shouldn't knock down. And Glyphwick and the DNR got together, and we just posted a sign that said the lactoflammable rice chiefs have deemed this rice isn't ready. Please stay off. We're asking you, please stay off, and we'll let you know when we think it is. And so I think it's going to be that kind of year. And where you have the rice, people are going to go get it. And when you see rice, boy, that might be all you get. I think it's going to be a very, very tough year.
Yeah, definitely not the only crop that's in duress right now. But, again, any other questions? Or
no, thanks very much.
Thanks
yeah,
for coming
Jim,
on.
I really appreciate it. Jim Zorn, Executive Administrator for the Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission. You're more than welcome to hang on the line if you like, but we're gonna switch topics a bit here. But thank you so much for your...
That's great. No, this is a great opportunity, and Dave Carlson, you asked, you know, what can be done for the tribes to get their stories out there. We really appreciate this station and you outdoor guys. Is that what you're called?
That's what we're calling them.
to take the time with us and talk about it. It's, as I've been saying to a lot of people, it's really how the community of the state here responds to all of this and look forward rather than talk about how we're going to fight about it. And that's the message I think I'd like to end with. So I really appreciate this opportunity.
All right. Well, thank you so much. And again, Jim Zorn of Glyphwick. And for the rest of our listeners out there, if you want to comment on the wolf hunt, you're still more than welcome to give us a call at 800-228-5615. But we're going to move on and talk a bit about some other hunting seasons coming up this fall. And to do that, we're going to welcome on John Dunn. He's a semi-retired wildlife biologist with the DNR here in covering Eau Claire and Chippewa counties. John, thanks for joining us.
Thanks very much for having me.
All right, I think I got you. Technical difficulties here. I think we got you loud and clear now. But thanks again for being here. And John, I do have I hate to do it, but a wolf hunt question for you. But my main question is, how does the state or how do the hunters know if that 201, the number has been reached? There's going to be 2,000 permits until, and they're all going to be good until the harvest quota of 201 is reached. How do they look online or something like that?
Well, they have a 24-hour period that they would have to register that wolf, assuming that the season goes on as planned.
Mm-hmm.
And once that is registered, of course, that the harvest will be, the tally will be kept accumulating. And when we reach a point very close to the harvest in the particular zones, the word will go out, via all the social medias, certainly papers, TV, radio, Twitter, Facebook, you name it, DNR website, and it would be announced at that point that particular zone might be closed or would be closed.
Okay.
I got to set something up here about the hunting season here. Good news coming out of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's five-year survey, 2006 to 11. The number of hunters in the state, in the nation, 16 and over, has increased 9%, reversing a downward trend. Survey taken since 1955, every 5 years. That's encouraging. And, during the time, at least for me, there's a time during summer when I'm fishing bass or fishing trout, and I'm into it, and I don't want that to ever end. There's a whiff of some kind of a scent in the air or a little bit of coolness that hits you, and you think, maybe I'm going to get up again for this hunting season here, and it will come, and I want to be part of it. Okay, having said that, there's a lot of good things out there for people to hunt.
Well, fishing increased to 11%, so you were okay to keep fishing.
Either way, but that's a good reversal. September 1st, it starts rolling, John, with mourning doves and geese. Tell us about it.
Well, those mornings where the hint of fall has been few and far between, but I think they've been welcomed by all of us when we do get up in the morning and actually want to put on something a little warmer before we let the dogs outside.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
It's sort of been few and far between, but very welcome, and certainly we're heading in that direction. Certainly we have a fall that most all of us are looking forward to. And obviously there's many seasons that are coming up, and I guess if you start looking at them chronologically, you know, the first one would be the dove and then the early goose season.
And Joe, didn't you have a name for that?
Oh, I called it the golf course season.
Well, you know, and in essence, you're right, or city park season. Certainly, the early goose season is intended to harvest the birds that nest locally, not the migrants that continue up to Ontario and James Bay area. These are birds that nest locally.
And they're the lazy ones?
Well, they're the giant ones. They're the bigger ones. Okay. So maybe they don't want to fly as far because of their size, but they are indeed slightly bigger than the migrants that continue further north. And, you know, these are the birds that we do see at the golf course, the ones that we see at Altoona Beach and Riverview Park that do make a mess on you know, the grass. And this season is really intended to try to harvest those birds before the Canadian migrants come through, so we can sort of separate the harvest between what we call the giant Canada geese in the early season and the exterior geese, the exterior season that really involves what we call the, you know, the interior or the lesser goose. So
their numbers have been increasing, and the number of people after them has too. I see a lot of people interested in that exterior zone hunt.
We've certainly seen an increase in that, the giant Canada goose flock, certainly statewide and beyond the borders of Wisconsin. And again, looking at it locally, certainly in the Eau Claire area, you know, we get regular complaints from, you know, people about what they're doing. I personally, you know, live on the north side of town on Riverview Drive and drive by Riverview Park and see them out there nibbling on the grass and doing their thing. And yes, they can be quite a nuisance and can become somewhat of a health issue.
Whoops.
I was going to say too about morning doves here. They've become very popular among early season gunners as well. There are people even throughout our area who have been managing for morning doves, both the state and private citizens.
Yeah, certainly there are some farming techniques that can be used. Sunflower seeds in particular are, you know, a very good crop that the doves are attracted to. And it has become a very popular hunt, probably more so in the southern part of the state than around here, but it's been very popular. And contrary to some of the concerns that we were going to wipe out the dove population, it has not happened.
Have you planted sunflowers on any of the state lands around here? I read it in our news release.
Now, are you asking from a professional standpoint or a personal one?
Well, since I'm asking on the air, unless you want to wait till this program's over and draw me a map.
I believe that there are maybe some sunflowers planted in Dunn County. There's nothing in Eau Claire or Chippewa County, nothing that I have personally been involved in.
Well, that's good.
Then after, on the heels of that, after a couple of weeks of morning dove and exterior, we move right into the small game season.
Well, and you know, starting September 5th, so just, again, a few days after the early goose season, we have the bear season starting.
I skipped over that.
And this year, the bear baiters get to go first. They get to go first on September 5th. And then a week later, on the 12th, the dog hunters get to go. And again, in our portion of the state, essentially Zone C of the bear zones, we don't have hunting with dogs.
Okay, so that's for myself, who is not up on my bear hunting regulations. Zone C, that's where you do bait, but you can't use dogs. Is that?
That's correct. You can train with dogs prior to the season, which has essentially been going on most of the summer. Since July 1st, but you cannot hunt with dogs in Zone C, which would essentially cover all of western Wisconsin with the exception of the very northeastern corner of Chippewa County.
Since we were just talking about wolves, I haven't heard as much about the wolves killing the dogs during the training as I have in past years. Is that just because it's not news anymore?
No, I would say that's not the answer, because I would get reports of any dog depredation, whether it would hit the press or not, I would still get reports. And no, we have not had any. A few years ago, we did have a couple of dogs in Clark County, out in the Clark County forest, that were killed by wolves. And that hasn't happened now in the last couple of years.
Any theory why?
Well, I think a couple of reasons. One, the bear hunter, you know, learns where to put dogs out on bear and where not to. And also, we have had some changes in the wolf territories in Eau Claire and Clark County. There's been some realignment of their territories, and we essentially know that by the monitoring that we're doing of the wolf population in this area. And I think the result of sort of the realignment of their territories has actually resulted in less conflicts with dogs.
I think the early season bow hunters are going out. They might have to be going out in short sleeves and short pants, too. It could be quite warm the way the weather's going. But there are traveling around. I'm seeing a lot of deer, bucks and fawns, and bucks running together two, three, four at a time. You know, you make mental note of that as you're driving along, covering hundreds or thousands of miles a week, and it just seems that bow hunters are going to see a lot of deer come that opener, and same for the people who are eventually going to get into the gun season, too. I think there's a lot of deer out there.
This is really a fun time of the year to go out for walks and put trail cameras out. Because the bucks are still grouped up in their bachelor groups. You know, they're not ready to split up. And, you know, you could see several bucks in one group. And that, you know, that's sort of fun, especially on a trail camera where, you know, you may have three or four, even five bucks of different sizes all on in one frame of a trail camera, because, you know, they tend to be grouped up this time of the year and haven't split up. But we've been seeing quite a few fawns, a lot of twins. Of course, we had a mild winter and we had a very early spring, and all that helps. So, yeah, I think, I guess, despite some, you know, the complaints that we get and realizing that, again, deer are not distributed evenly throughout the landscape, there's a fair number of deer out there.
Let's take our final break here on the West Side Outside. When we come back, we'll talk. I've got some questions about CWD that maybe you can help out with. John Dunn and also the outdoor guys. So we'll wrap up this discussion of the West Side Outside right after this break. I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to the West Side Outside on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in. If you'd like to give a call in and bring up any of your fall hunting things that you're excited about, give us a call, 800-228-5615. That number again is 800-228-5615. Right now, we have Joe Knight, outdoor editor for the Eau Claire Leader-Telegram, in the studio, Dave Carlson, host of the syndicated TV show Northland Adventures, and John Dunn, semi-retired wildlife biologist with the DNR here in Eau Claire. Again, the number is 800-228-5615 if you have any questions or concerns. And, John, I do want to ask you, I know that there was a meeting in Spooner this week regarding, I believe it was last night, regarding CWD, and to the best of my knowledge, there's been 50, 60-some samples taken, and so far they have tested negative, all of them?
As far as I know, that's correct. Certainly they've been taking an reasonably aggressive approach at sampling any deer they can get their hands on since the one was discovered near Shell Lake. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the bulk of those are going to be road kills that are being sent in. But again, once the season starts, they're going to really be concentrating very close to where the actual CWD positive deer was taken. And again, they're going to do some intensive monitoring within a 2-mile radius of that, a little less intensive within a 10-mile radius. And beyond that, they're going to be just testing, as hunters request. Mm-hmm. So it's a little different approach from what we had in the southern part of the state. And, you know, we're learning as we go. When we first ended up with CWD in Wisconsin, it was obviously very new to us. And we took the, I guess, the most appropriate action that we knew of at that time. But, I've obviously learned some lessons in the meantime. And, so now we're really just trying to concentrate on the area, very localized, the area around where the actual positive deer came from.
And I know that the DNR has mentioned that they'd like 500 to 1,000 samples whenever they, by the end of gun deer season, hopefully, best case scenario. But with these 50 or so negatives, I mean, can we rest easy yet?
Well, I guess if you look at it sort of superficially, I mean, that's good news. That's great news that there hasn't been any more. But if you look at it from a statistician standpoint, and I'm not one, but when you look at their point, they want a sample size of 500 or more to get the reliability in numbers of that. So even though it's certainly very good news that nothing has shown up yet, we need a much larger sample size, before I guess we can rest a little easier on it.
The rite of passage for deer hunters is pretty, pretty flush these days. A lot of activity for young people out there. The department sponsors a Learn to Hunt program. Last year, they were shooting for 2,000 participants. They hit 2,300, I believe the figures are, 23% more than the previous year. They're looking for clubs to get involved in that. Those events are coming up. I know our Pheasants Forever chapter has a youth hunt October 6th. They can get a hold of Tim Schultz, Doug Burrows. I know those are foreign names perhaps to some people, but get a hold of those folks. There's a lot for the kids, and we've got a waterfowl hunt coming up, for youth waterfowl hunt, September 15th as well, the opener of bow season. I mean, a lot of things out there.
That's a big weekend. That always is. That 15th, or, the third Saturday in September is always huge, because it's not only the beginning of deer archery season, but it's also the small game opening, and also the waterfowl youth hunt. So that's a date that many people have marked on their calendar, an important date. Certainly the department has taken what I would see as a very aggressive approach towards trying to involve not just youth hunters, but new hunters through the mentoring program, which really applies to anybody of any age if they haven't hunted that particular species, but youth hunt as well. And certainly in Madison, we've hired people that, do that as a full-time job, trying to promote hunting and fishing as a full-time position.
Why we're up 9%?
I would hope that has something to do with it.
The flip side of that 9%, that 9% more helped hunting in 2011 to be a $34 billion industry that year.
Big business. But
that's with a B. That includes their licenses, all of what the Fish and Wildlife Services survey found that they spend on firearms and ammunition, clothing, travel expenses, lodging, foods, and so forth. $34 billion, that's a big economic impact. There's no doubt about it. And no doubt one that will play, as it has in the last two presidential elections, a very major role in determining who is going to be the president of the United States.
I think so.
Well, it was for Gore, and it was Kerry, and I think we're talking politics like that.
Should we just have him go out and shoot skeet, and in the winter takes it.
Yeah.
Save a lot of bad advertising.
It would.
There are a couple of
it's
things.
A strong lobby.
Obviously, I think you're probably nearing the end of the show here.
We're getting close.
And I think we've just scratched the surface when it comes to our
keep them coming. Keep
them
coming.
Our fall hunting. Just, to go through some things very quickly before time is out, we do have, again, a waterfowl season coming up. It's a 60-day season. It's going to be very comparable to the last several years. That's considered a liberal season based on the Fish and Wildlife Service framework. We, again, have the youth hunt coming up on September 15th and 16th. One change that has taken place this year is in the north zone. There will actually be a split in the duck season. That's something that the south zone has had, and south zone would be south of Highway 10. has had for a number of years, but this is the first year that we're actually having a five-day split in the north zone, which then will allow the duck hunting season to extend actually into deer gun season. So it runs a little; it will run a little bit later into the fall.
The Mississippi zone this year opens with the north zone too, does it not?
Yes.
September 22nd.
Yeah.
That's a change.
So, you know, there are some things coming up with the duck season. Bear season we've talked about a little bit. I just would want to remind people that we are still collecting ribs as well as teeth from bear harvested this fall. Hmm. And again, that is part of the tetracycline study that started last year. And again, this is sort of the second round that we've had with the tetracycline study, which, again, goes into our population modeling. Grouse hunting, unfortunately, the grouse population seems to be taking a drop. It appears that last year was the peak. Mm. And again, most grouse hunters know that there tends to be about a 10-year cycle with grouse. It appears that last year was probably the peak, and we are now sort of starting on a downward trend. So grouse are going to be spotty, and I guess the place to look for them is in where the better habitat is, which stands to reason. Excuse me.
Near water, too.
Pheasant season is about the same. The surveys are about the same as last year, down just a fraction, something that's not going to be real noticeable. Our local surveys were sort of variable. The surveys in Eau Claire County were up. The surveys in Dunn County were down, and the surveys in St. Croix County were up. So I would expect to find pheasants in about the same.
Hasn't there been a big drop, though, associated with the losses here?
Well, I was just going to mention that. Unfortunately, the loss of those grassland habitats as a result of people coming out of CRP is certainly impacting that. And I noticed it in particular this spring when I was doing pheasant surveys. A lot of the ground that had been in grass for years was being plowed up and put into corn.
Fall turkey season, a new thing this year. They mailed you your registration slip. I just got that the other day.
There are some new things going on, and I don't think we're going to have time to probably cover it all.
Unfortunately not. That's our time. I'd like to thank my guests, including Jim Zorn of the Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission, Mick Isham of the LCO Tribal Council. Thank you very much, both of you, for being with us earlier. John Dunn, wildlife biologist with the Wisconsin DNR, Joe Knight, and Dave Carlson. Thank you, guys. It was a good discussion. Also, I'd like to thank Team Westside for helping me put this program together. That includes Rebecca Rudolph, Joey Dietrich, Grace Fair, Dean Collenbeck, and also Mort Cypress. We're glad to have him back around the phones. We'll talk again next week.